Hey everybody, welcome to That Which Cannot Be Destroyed. Shout out to, I was looking at the analytics of this show. We got listeners in Germany, Australia, New Zealand, Thailand, and of course, good old US of A.
Australia.
Yep, in Australia. So today we're talking about a thing that cannot be destroyed, which is the Psalms. So I was reading on Wikipedia that some people or modern day scholars say that David didn't write the Psalms.
He didn't write all of them.
He didn't write all of them?
No, he did not.
Well, who wrote the other ones?
I don't remember their names, but there's record that they were, some of them were written by somebody besides David, but some of the best ones were written by David.
Yeah. So do you have a favorite psalm? Or you just like the book altogether, right?
Right.
What is it that you like about the book of Psalms?
The book? What do I like about it? I like everything, I think, because it's really honest. It has a certain honesty about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I like best.
Yeah, and a lot of those times he's in despair, right?
Right.
He's in despair, and these are supposed to be songs, right? These are supposed to be sung out loud.
Yes.
It wasn't just something that he wrote. It was something that, did he mean for it to be sung, or did we do that later on with, like, different churches would pick it up, or religious groups or whatever, and turn them into songs? Or did he organize them?
The way I understand it, and this might not be totally correct, Mark, but David wrote those, but he also sang to the Lord. He sang those psalms to the Lord. And people who are so against somebody dancing, it specifically says he danced before the Lord. He sang those songs to God. I guess it was his way of worshiping.
Yeah, it was a way he could get his full self into it.
Mm-hmm.
After writing it, singing and dancing it, that's something we were talking about, was feeling like the way that you manifest things, and the way that you, if you want something, if you don't have something in your life and you want it in your life, you tell yourself that you already have it. And then you feel, you make yourself feel as if you already have it. So his prayers to God, those songs that he wrote, he would sing and dance them. And that was like another way to get them to make that come true, right?
Right.
His offering to God.
Right.
And was to sing and dance. And that was him getting into the moment and making those things happen, or trying to get himself out of the despair he was in, right? Because his enemies were pursuing him.
And, right. And he had no problem asking God to do his enemies in. He would tell him, slay them.
Yeah.
I mean, so
he didn't hold back.
No.
Did he write those when he was king, before or after he was king, or both?
Both. I would think both. But
it's probably,
would need to look more into it.
Yeah, it's probably documented somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, somebody has done the research on it. I remember you reading to me the 23rd Psalm and then having me memorize it, and I could visualize everything in that. I could visualize the green pastures and the still waters, and it painted an image in my mind. And then the table prepared before me in the presence of my enemies, and then my cup runneth over. I could see all those things in my head. So that was like a really beautiful thing, because that's a really early memory for me.
I guess you were what, 3 years old when you memorized all that?
I was only three.
Maybe.
Oh, wow.
You were little.
Were there any other ones? Like, that's the most famous one, 23rd Psalms. It seems like people point that one out, and it has the walking through the valley of the shadow of death. I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left, like Coolio says in the song Dangerous Minds.
That you know, David wasn't talking about you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You know, he was talking about while he was still on earth, because after he died and he went to be with God, he didn't have any enemies where he went. So he was saying God prepared a table before him in the presence of his enemies.
Yeah, I always thought that, like, on earth. Yeah, I never pictured that psalm as talking about, he's going to heaven or passing away or something like that. He's on earth because he's going through the valley of the shadow of death. That's the struggles we go through on earth. I'm sure there's some deeper symbolic meanings to that as well, which I could probably look into. It's probably like some esoteric understanding of it, significance to it. But yeah, I always pictured it being here. I'll dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Even that, I thought he's just, he's going to be protected as the surely goodness and mercy will follow me all of the days of my life. And that it's kind of like a comforting thing to say and to memorize and to think that, you're going to be protected, goodness and mercy, which everybody probably wants for their life, unless you just like getting into trouble or something, or you like a different way of living. If you're like some kind of weird masochist or something, you probably wouldn't want goodness and mercy to follow you, but I would imagine that applies to pretty much everybody. Everybody would want that kind of peaceful life.
Right, I think so.
And that's for Earth. That's for like on Earth. Do you remember if he wrote any about the other realms or like about heaven or about something like that, paradise or?
No, not right now, I don't remember. But King Saul was always trying to, he was so jealous of David, and he always was wanting to kill him. And he had this evil spirit, I suppose, that came up on him and made him real miserable, mean, and uncomfortable. And David would play his harp, and that evil spirit would leave him. So there's a lot of significance of what music can do for a person too. There's just so much stuff to learn out of that book, and just flat things flash through my mind.
Yeah, definitely. That's a cool story that he was able to do that.
Yeah,
He was
but
able to play the harp and to soothe the.
and see, he was set up to take that kingdom where Saul was king. And then after David had played and kept him calm and all that, well, then after that, he tried to kill David. Remember, he chased him all through them mountains and David could have killed him because he snuck up where he was sleeping and took a knife and cut part of his bottom off his robe thing. And the next day held it up, to show him. I could have took you out. I just didn't.
What happened to Saul after David took over the kingdom? Do you remember?
No, not right offhand.
But David didn't kill him or anything, huh?
No. He wouldn't, because he was anointed of God to have that, to be king. But David would go out to battle, and he'd win all the battles, and when he'd be coming back, they'd be coming back home, the women and the people would be singing, Saul has killed his however many, and but David has killed his 10,000, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Saul was very jealous.
Yeah, he was a threat to
mm-hmm.
him.
Mm-hmm.
He was the better man, right? Threat to the throne.
Yep.
So, after the Psalms were written, what comes after that? I should say, like, who are the other writers of the Psalms? And I wonder how they got compiled together. That'd be an interesting story.
I don't know.
It says here, the origins, it's from Wikipedia. It says, the composition of the Psalms spans at least 5 centuries, from Psalm 29 to others, clearly from the post-exilic period, not earlier than 5th century BC. The majority originated in the southern kingdom of Judah and were associated with the temple in Jerusalem, where they probably functioned as libretto during the temple worship. Exactly how they did this is unclear, although there are indications in some of them. Bind the festal procession with branches up to the horns of the altar suggests a connection with sacrifices, and let my prayer be counted as incense suggests a connection with the offering of incense. The Psalms were not merely written as poems, but as songs for singing. According to the Bible, exeget Saadian Gaon, 882 to 942, who served in the Geonit of Babylonian Jewry, the Psalms were originally sung in the temple precincts by the Levites, based on what was prescribed for each psalm: lineage of the singers, designated time and place, instruments used, manner of execution, etc., but are permitted to be randomly read by anyone at any time and in any place. More than a third of the Psalms are addressed to the director of music. Yeah, I seem to remember that at the beginning, it'll say, like, to the director of music. It says that, like, as the heading, huh? Right before the Psalm starts. Yeah, there's a lot of information here. I guess we could do a whole podcast reading through the Wikipedia page, huh? Many authors have commented on the Psalms, including Hilary of Poitiers. It's spelled like Poitiers, but it's probably pronounced Poitiers. Augustine of Hippo. Saadia. I don't know what I'm saying. Gaon. Thomas Aquinas and John Calvin. So all of those boring, poor souls wrote about the Psalms by themselves, at candlelight in the 1400s, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Lonely and cold. And what did they get for what they wrote? Nothing. They're gone.
What they get for what they wrote? Nothing. But gone.
Maybe they influenced people. I mean, people are still reading their stuff. They have a index. They're in the index on the Wikipedia page, so it's highlighted. You can click on them because they wrote a bunch of stuff. But here's a little thing. It says never mind. I don't want to read that one. Something about conservative Protestants. I don't care about that. Oriental Christianity, several branches of Oriental Orthodox.
I got to ask you a question, and I don't want none of your goofy answers. I want to your sincere intelligence when I ask you this. Because okay. I never know what you're going to... I'm not going to record it. But what I want to know, what do you think about the way the whole Bible has been misrepresented in a lot of churches? And they have, and it's messed up people's lives because... They didn't, maybe the people didn't go to church to really worship God or learn about God. They went because their best friend went, or they particularly liked the preacher or something. They didn't have the right motive, but then they stuck around, but they got bad instruction. And... what do you really, really think about that?
About them getting bad instruction, going to...
Yes, and about their motives. It's like we're humans, I know. But it's like, you know, when I read this, it means something to me. And... I know when Joyce started going to her Bible study, there were ladies that had gone to church for like 40 years and 50 years. They'd never read the Bible before they started that Bible study. It's older ladies, and they were just really excited about...
getting into it?
Yeah, and what the Bible said.
Wow.
And then I guess that lady was really excellent and knew how to involve the... they're all the people, and it was good because I every time Joyce went, I heard about it, you know, and it was a good Bible study, but I just think that churches that call themselves churches that teaches, they should be very careful how they teach the Bible, or maybe people should be very careful how they listen.
Yeah. Well, you just, it, I think it works best if you read it for yourself.
I know it does.
You know, you just, it's good to talk about it with other people or to get, like, listen to somebody speak about it, but it's going to stay with you and you're going to capture different meanings of it, of the parables and of the teachings. And it, like the symbology and like all the different the ways of telling a story, there's like hidden meanings in a lot of these things. They're purposely written that way. I don't know if any Psalms were written that way, but I know like a lot of stuff that Jesus said was written in parables. It was written as a story, but there's like these symbols, and then he would interpret it to the few
that had ears.
Yeah, it's like he was purposely telling this secretive, encrypted story. So, you're not going to know unless you really read it and understand it. And then it's good to read other things too and put everything into context.
Right.
And then you look into symbology and all these things and you begin to understand the story of the stars. A lot of this stuff has to do with the zodiac. A lot of symbols in the Bible in different books like Revelation and things like that will end up being the story of the stars in a way. Like star magic. It's pretty cool. But I think that people going to the churches and stuff, like, it's not gonna... they may get caught up in something and led down a path to where a lot of people use it to manipulate each other. A lot of people use it to make somebody feel bad, to judge people, to put people down, to make themselves feel powerful and better and righteous. Because that's still something that people like to do. People to this day, people still do that. They like to give their interpretation of it and say, this is the way. Listen to me. I can help you out. subscribe, do all this, you know, like send me money, do all this stuff, because I can tell you what those encrypted things mean. And that's no good.
But
it's not a good thing at all.
No. And God speaks to you through this.
Yeah.
And he speaks personally to you when you have enough sense to pick it up, open it up, read it. He speaks to you. It's like they, when you hear a speaker, like on television or at a church or wherever, they're speaking to everybody in general that's congregated there.
Yeah.
But when you allow yourself to pick your Bible up and read it, God's speaking to you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And on that note, we will end this episode.
Are you recording?
Yeah, it's been recording the whole time.
I'll cut my throat off.
Why?
It's horrible.
I think we did good.
We're talking about
a bunch of stuff. But yeah, that's the end of the episode. Thank you for listening. Thank you to wherever you're at. Pick up these books, read them, whatever the things we come across here. This is that which cannot be destroyed. And what that means is the spirit, the flame, the fire, the thing within. The thing within you that will not die, the energy. And in science, they say that energy was not created and cannot be destroyed, right? And we see in these ancient scriptures, it says a similar thing. So that's what the title of the show means, if you're wondering. That which cannot be destroyed. Thank you for tuning in. Goodbye.